Hey, this is Fat Mike and Hefe from NoFX, and you're listening to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast.
It sucks, I still think Mabel, she's the bomb.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast. This is Kristen, and I am joined today by my friend Sal.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. I'm actually in your room, in your house.
Yep.
Yeah.
With my cat.
I know. What's the cat's name?
Her name is Devo.
Yeah, I think she likes me.
Yeah, she's nice.
Yeah, any cat that like lets you rub on them and scratch their head and rub their chin and stuff is good.
No one wants a cat that just treats you like a bad roommate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want one that shows like a little bit of affection.
Right.
Not too much.
Right.
But a little bit.
Yeah. That's nice.
Cool. So you brought me here because you told me you could like show me interfaces and we could like get a really high quality recording.
This is just equipment that I have. So I just figured that to do this intro with you.
Yeah.
If you were in town.
Yeah.
Come over and try out the equipment, you know?
I will only be trying out the audio equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that's good.
Am I the first repeat guest? I mean, this isn't really my interview, but
I think, well, we had those Trashed Ambulance guys on, and then they were also in another band called Loser Points.
Oh, right.
So they came on twice, but they were in two different bands.
Yeah, we'll give it to them.
Huh?
We'll give it to them.
Well, yeah, they were repeat guests.
They're nice.
I think Sarah's been on a couple times.
Yes, that's true.
And I just recorded an introduction with Danielle. So she's going to make an appearance on the Mabel Syndrome Podcast, which is cool.
I'm not a Mabel, though.
We have a new name. You know how we say like co-Mabel?
Yeah.
Now there's bro Mabels.
What's bro Mabel?
A dude that supports girls.
I think that's just called a Brable.
I like bro Mabel. So we have co-Mabels and bro Mabels.
Yeah, that's
you like
cool.
Brable.
I don't want to be called either of those things. Can we just be friends?
Can we just be friends? This is
our real life
Sal.
Friends.
We are real life friends.
Yeah.
But
if you were like, can you be my co-Mabel to this show? I'd be like, no, I'll just see you there.
Oh my god, that's funny. I've never had a co-Mabel at a show. Well, that's not true. I went to a show with Danielle once. That's the only time I've ever been to a show with
to a show with Jessica.
Yeah, right? I've been to a show with Jessica. Yeah that's true. Mm-hmm. But I don't
and
like
Sarah.
And Sarah, yeah.
You're but such a liar on this podcast.
I know. You're proving me wrong.
Oh, except for those three
it's
times.
It's past my bedtime. It's 10:42.
And I just got home from bingo. What did you do tonight?
Do you know how many nights I've been up past 10:42 ever?
Me, it's every night.
I know. I'm not. It's not for me. So if I'm particularly brain dead, that's why.
Yes, we can blame it on that.
Yeah. And also, the reason I was close to where Sal lives is because I got a tattoo tonight.
Fat Rams?
Yeah. I meant to ask. It was the same thing where you hate to ask a band how they got their name.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask how they got the name Fat Ram Pumpkin Tattoo.
Yeah.
Like, what? That's so random.
Right. But if you didn't ask him, then, like, how would you know?
Exactly. I didn't ask because I know the band situation and how annoying that is to be asked all the time.
You know what? I think anyone that says as a band, like, oh, we hate being asked, like, where'd you get your name from?
Right.
Like, be fucking thankful anyone wants to even ask you a fucking question.
Right.
If someone were to ask me like all the time, where'd you get your name from? And I had to answer it. I'd be like, well, like, I guess I have to answer that question. I guess someone wants to know.
At least someone wants to know.
Sure. Rebuilder isn't like a crazy enough name where anyone really cares. Mm-hmm. But like, I think if you have a weird ass name, you're ready for that question. Diarrhea Planet. Those guys got that question every
single interview. That's obvious.
What?
Diarrhea Planet. That's not like a how'd you get your name, I don't think.
I would say that's one that would they'd be like, why did you name your band Diarrhea Planet?
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I suppose so.
And like, if they got sick of that, like, maybe don't name your band something weird like that, you know? Like, I don't know.
I think I do. No. Oh, in this interview with John that we have playing in the second half of this podcast, I don't ask John how he got his name, the name of the band, Dead Bars, because I know that. That's pretty obvious. But I did ask the difference between a dead bar and a dive bar.
That's a good question.
And he explains the difference.
But I think one of the first times I hung out with John, I go, why'd you name it Dead Bars? And he was just like, one dead bar at a time, man. And I was like, all right.
Perfect.
John Maiello would never, ever be like, oh, I hate when people ask about our name. Same thing. He would be thrilled that anyone is asking.
Yeah.
Him, you know?
He's awesome. Yeah. But back to me. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So your tattoo.
Yeah. It was really important to me. I wanted to get this tattoo. It's just a bunch of flowers that have various different meanings for me, but the focal point, the reason I wanted to get it is because one of my best friends died a couple years ago. She committed suicide, and her favorite flower was a daisy. And I'm not really a daisy person.
Sure.
But I thought that would be a way to commemorate her. And also, this is kind of a funny story. Every year I plant daisies in her honor, in her memory. Right. And last year they all died. Which was so terrible. But then they came back miraculously out of nowhere.
I think that's like some flowers do that, though.
No. It wasn't like they died over the winter and then came back.
Right.
They died like right after the summer or right in the middle of the summer. They just died out of nowhere. And I was like, what the hell? Like, how do these flowers die? I water them every day. I take good care of them.
Oh, so you did take care of them.
Of course.
I thought you were like neglecting them and then they went away.
Why would I neglect these important flowers?
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks that it died, but that's
no,
great.
But it they came back.
That's great. That's awesome.
They like literally were gone and then they just sprouted out of the ground. 2 years worth of two different types of daisies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
I know.
That must have been happy to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not. I was like, thank God they didn't. I thought it was funny because my friend that passed away had a really good sense of humor, like a really kind of self-deprecating and silly sense of humor. Yeah. So when they died, I was like, I kind of talked to her. I was like, Katie, your fucking flowers died.
Right. These flowers that if you were alive, I would tell you how much I hate these flowers.
Yeah, totally. Like you would laugh that the flowers I bought for you died. Yeah.
So you get that tattoo to remember her.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Do you have any tattoos to remember like a person?
I don't.
No.
I have... I don't know how meaningful my tattoos are to me. They're all like things I like they're all meaningful in like some way. Like there's a lot of like subtle band references in mine, you know? But no, I've never really got a tattoo to like remember somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say I wouldn't, you know, I think that's like a nice thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
My friend recently committed suicide as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yours was a couple of years ago or last year. Yeah. So this girl, her name's Brittany Strummer. You might have seen some stuff online.
I did,
about her.
Yeah. I don't know her, but I saw it.
We weren't like extremely close, but like she was someone that I would consider a friend, you know, and like someone that I was very always like happy to see. Like, you know, and it's one of those things like I can't even remember like when we started being friends, but I just knew her through like punk news. She was always writing about bands and I, like the first bands I ever had, I reached out to her and I was like, hey, like, do you think you can help us out? When like nobody would, you know, and she would always give us a write up. And it was something that I always like really appreciated. And then we were always Facebook friends and like her last name's not really Strummer, but it was that way because she loves The Clash.
Okay.
My favorite band is The Clash.
Oh, okay.
And we always had that together was that like we both loved The Clash.
Mm-hmm.
And after years and years and years of being Facebook friends and always like talking online, Fest 2 years back, she was looking for a ride from Orlando to Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, we have a show in Orlando. The next day we're driving to Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
So we can pick you up. We picked her and her friend up and they joined in the van together. But it was one of those things like it wasn't weird like... Like that was the first time I ever met her, but it wasn't like weird. It was just like, well, we've been friends for years.
Yeah.
And
That happens a lot in our scene, I think.
Like, I think it does.
There's a lot of people that we're friends with on Facebook that we interact with a lot, that we interact with professionally or whatever. And then you finally meet them in person and it's like, you just know them already. Yeah.
And that's how it was for when I met Brittany. And like, you know, the 3 days that we're at Fest, we ran into each other and Red City Radio did like a Clash cover set. Mm-hmm. And like, we were both there just like singing together because we were like, yeah, this is like our favorite band, you know? And like literally the only reason I ever wanted to play Colorado, which we never did, was because I wanted like Brittany to come out to like a Rebuilder show.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, and like I would always talk to her and be like, what venue should we play? She's like, this is like the stuff. And if you come through, mm-hmm. I'll feed you at Illegal Pete's where I work, the burrito place.
Yeah.
And like just through Facebook, I saw that she was like having a hard time.
Yeah.
And I think I'd messaged her a couple of times just being like, hey, just like hope you're doing well, you know, or just be like, I just want you to know that I appreciate you, you know. And she was always like, I, you know, that means a lot. Like, mm-hmm. thank you. Or like there was a whole dumb thing where she like had a fidget spinner at All Fest and it was like trying to like get fidget spinners of bands and stuff. And so like I would always just like find a fidget spinner online.
Yeah.
I found out the Clash and I sent it to her like a picture.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I was like, yeah, like it's just dumb shit like that, you know? And that was really the extent of our friendship. So mm-hmm. when I found out that she died, it was heartbreaking, you know? And it was like just super upsetting because it's like such a selfish thing. Like someone said this, I think, I don't remember who, I think, oh, it was someone reached out to Steve-O from Jackass. Mm-hmm. She loves Steve-O from Jackass.
Okay.
And he said something like, you know, it's such a selfish thing because the reason why we're like sad is we're never going to get to hang out with that person again. And mm-hmm. it's like for us, like we want that fulfillment from that person, you know, and hopefully they're like not struggling anymore with mm-hmm. the things going on with them.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's like, it's one of those things, like you just want to be able to hang out with them again, you know?
Right.
And I think, you know, getting a tattoo or having something to remember them by, like, I think some people made some Britney enamel pins that are being made.
Oh,
and
nice.
Like, I ordered a print that a friend of ours from Olympia made all these prints that were like, not screen press, but they were letterpress.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered one because it's just one of those things, like I'll hang it up and always remember Brittany, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think it's nice to have something like that, but it's really fulfilling for you.
Of course. Yeah, I struggled with the fact that, so my friend has a son and I struggled with how do I maintain a relationship with him?
Right.
Because I'm sure he would love to see me, that's fine.
Yeah.
But that relationship is for me.
Right.
And so what I gave it a lot of thought about, like, I'm not going to inundate this kid and be like, let's hang out, kid. You know, like that's all for me. I see him when I see him. I'm friends with her husband and her kid. And I send them Christmas presents and I see them as much as I possibly can. But what I started doing is writing a diary of all the stories I can remember about Katie, because Katie and I went to college together and we lived together for a long time. And I just have all these funny, funny stories about her. And I thought, I'm going to give it to him someday later. Like, and some of them are like funny college stories, you know, drinking stories, not ridiculous, but just funny stories. And I thought someday when he wants to know what was my mom like as an adult,
right,
he can get some real like stories about her.
I think that's nice.
Yeah.
I think that's nice. I also, I don't think that you should feel like you don't want to like overwhelm this kid or like hang out with him. Like, I think like, you know, I think if that happened to my parent and like someone's like friend, like my parent's friend wanted to like hang out with me and tell me stories about my mom, I think I would like appreciate
it. If you were a little kid though, wouldn't you be like, why is this weird person? Like, I just want to kind of move on and be with my friends.
I mean, I think if someone feels that way, but like, it's one of those things, like, I think if you make that effort and it might be receptive, you know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are like afraid to like say things and do things sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that's like, you know, that's one of the problems with like suicide and depression. It's like, you know, a lot of, and what upsets me a lot is like, you know, I'll sometimes see things where like, you know, if you ever need someone to talk to, like, here's the hotline, or, like, you know, feel free to reach out. And it's like, it's not that simple sometimes, you know, like, I've been there before. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I was able to get to a place where I didn't feel suicidal anymore or as helpless. But, like, those thoughts don't go away.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always something that lingers with me. And a lot of times you always kind of just wish that, like, one of your friends just kind of, like, didn't even reach out to see if you're feeling okay, just to, like maybe you just need a friend just to reach out, like, just be like, hey, let's go do something, or like, hey, I haven't talked to you in a while, you know,
or to make, and to make that effort. There's a big difference between, you know, let me know if I can help versus I'm coming over in an hour to do something. Does that make sense? There's a lot of let me know if I can help, which is so passive. And like who's going to be like, yeah, you can help, you can do this, this, this. People don't do that.
Sometimes it's really hard. Like, if when people are like, you know, let me know if you ever need anything. Right. Like, it's really hard for me to, like, say, like, I'm actually not doing well right now, and I actually need someone. Like, to say those words out loud is, like, sometimes not really possible.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, there's times I've thought about, like, calling, like, a hotline. Mm-hmm. But, like, I remember, like, reading a thing on, like, Reddit, how, like, this guy, like, in a very similar situation that I felt before, like, just had, like, a bad night. Mm-hmm. Had a bad night, and he didn't want to, like, call his friends, because, like, you, like, a lot of times when you reach out to people who are, like, your friends, like, they can quickly judge you. Like, they don't want to deal with it, or they're afraid because they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, he didn't want to reach out to one of his friends. He called a hotline and was, like, talking to someone, and was like, I just don't feel well right now. And they're like, are you in danger of killing yourself? And he's like, I don't think so. Like, I feel suicide. I have suicidal thoughts. And, like, there's different levels. Yeah. I've had thoughts before. I don't think I would go through. And they called the police on the guy, and, like, you know, the police came and took him to a hospital, and, like, had he had to stay overnight for observation. And he's like, now my family thinks I'm, like, really on the brink of suicide. And it's like, that happened to me. I didn't call a hotline, but, like, it like, I had to ride in an ambulance to a hospital once, and, like, they, like, told my mom, they're like, yeah, like, if this happens too many times, like, we're gonna have to commit your son. My mom, for the longest time, whenever I called her for anything, would pick up and be like, is everything okay? It's like, this isn't what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes it's like, it's not that easy to just call the hotline, you know? Yeah. And it's sometimes it's just not that easy to, like, say, I need help, you know?
I thought those hotlines were anonymous. I didn't realize they can track you down and send a cop to your house.
Yeah, because, I mean, on the flip of that, if someone is on that brink of, like, wanting to kill yourself, they need to be able to save that person, you know? And maybe that trip to the hospital did save someone's life, but I don't think everyone is in that situation.
But how is anyone to know? I mean, I've been on the other side too, where I'm a counselor for teenagers. Right. So I've had the situation where a teenager comes to me and talks about feeling suicidal, and I have a whole assessment kind of that I do in my head about, you know, how are they thinking about it? Are they committed to it? Do they have a plan? Like, all these questions, right? But at the end of the day, you don't know, and heaven forbid something happens.
Right. You don't want that on your watch.
Oh my God.
Or think that you could have done something more.
Absolutely. So there's no right answer. I mean, I've sent kids in the ambulance to the hospital.
Right.
And it's a terrible thing, and you hate to do it. I always rode with them. I always ride with the kids. Yeah. Although one time I called the dad, and I said, you know, you have to I called the dad. The dad offered to come get the kid, take him to the hospital, which was fine. That was part of our protocol. But the dad was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to take him out for a burger. And I was like, no, this was a highly suicidal kid.
Right,
this was a kid that and actually had wounds from an attempt. And I was like, no, you need to take him to the hospital.
Yeah, like, that kid clearly needs more help than just, like, than that.
But it's just really hard to know what to do. And it is better safe than sorry. And I know my friend Katie called hotlines a lot, and they helped her a number of times. But this gets back to the point, too, that if someone is determined to end their pain and end their suffering, she tried several times. She tried hotlines. She tried different therapists. But she, at the end of the day, she just had to end her pain and suffering.
Yeah. And it sucks.
And, yeah.
Like, that's super sad. But like, you know, like when Britney ended her life and I found out, like I was so upset. And, you know, but like the thought in my head wasn't like I should have reached out more. Like I did reach out and I was hoping she was okay. But sometimes it was just not, that wasn't enough for her. It wasn't enough that people were like, she had so many people around her that loved her, you know, and like I've always said, like, she wasn't in a band, and it's like rare when you have someone who isn't in a band, but literally everybody knows her. Yeah. Every band knows her. Every fan knows her. She was like above that, you know, like she like she was more than what even a band could be, you know, like, and there was tons of people that loved her, you know, like, and including like Laura Jane Grace wrote a thing about her, you know, like Laura Jane Grace gave her the vest on Eternal Cowboy. Like, it's just one of those things, like sometimes that isn't just, that isn't enough to keep a person like to go on and fight it. You want them to, but sometimes it's not, and it's sad and it sucks.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when it comes to mental health, there really needs to be just more things readily available. I think, you know, there's, there's always, you hear how like musicians deal with so much stress when they're on tour, like people are on tour all the time, and I see it from a lot of my friends that are like road managers and stuff like that, and they're just like, yeah, there's not a lot of options out there for us, and I think that that needs to get better to help people, you know,
for sure. Well said. And you know what I wanted to bring up, because we were talking about tattoos, one of the things I talked to John about is his song No Tattoos,
right?
And I love the line about, and it's funny because it ties into this too, that some people want to remember, people want to remember some things. Yeah, I want to forget everything.
That's so funny.
It's so funny. It's so
profound. Rebuilder covered that song for a very long time.
Yeah.
Did he tell you about that?
Well, no, I've seen it. I've seen you guys. Yeah. And I saw you guys sing it together when, when they played here in Cambridge.
John, so John Maiello from Dead Bars is the perfect example of like someone who's like there for you, like in all aspects all the time, and like makes you feel better without trying. Like, I've never called John and been like, I'm having like a real hard time, dude. You know, like John will call me out of nowhere. Or and like he'll just be like, what's up, man? I'm like, nothing. What's going on? He's like, it's working. I'm like, cool. I was like, are you in your office with no windows? He's like, yeah, man, but there's a guitar in here. And it's like, you know, it's like, it's so John. And like, I'm so happy with their new record, because quickly how I met John, my brother who plays in the band Ramona was living in Seattle when he made the band. When Rebuilder first went out there, he was like, yeah, he booked us a show, and the show was Ramona, Dead Bars, Rebuilder, with Dead Bars headlining. And he's like, I'm going to put you with this band, Dead Bars. And he played me like some of their songs. And I was like, yeah, like, this is cool. I mean, like, it doesn't excite me. I don't think it's like amazing. And he was like, oh, it's so good. And I was like, yeah, I mean, sounds like every kind of like No Idea band. And then we like played with Dead Bars. Then I like, and like I hung out with John and I fell in love with the band.
Yeah.
It's just something about John. Like, he's the most, like, you know, he always says like, you know, like their record, like Dream Gig and Dream Big and that whole thing, and how he's like the dreamers, you know, and like, he really is, you know, and it's seeing someone who like loves music so much and at like has every obstacle that's ever been in front, whether it's like having to replace band members or having to do this over and over, he just goes through it. And there's no even question in his mind, like, you know, can we do this? He's like, we're doing this, you know? And it's, I love that about him. And it makes you happy, you know? And it was one of those things where when I saw that, and like, then I loved Dead Bars. Then I went to listen to it. But that's too many steps to have to go through to fall in love with Dead Bars. And like, you know, I explained that to him. And like, I was like, you guys need to make like a sick record. It's got to sound awesome. It can't be something that like, it takes so many steps. Like, you can't meet everybody. But the thing John will tell you is he will meet everyone, you know? And So this record, I think, took care of that. I remember I was talking to Chris Stowe from AF at Fest, and I said that same thing to him, and he goes, I know exactly what you mean. He goes, mm-hmm. I saw them in Pittsburgh and it blew me away, and then I met John and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And now we have like a record that like you can skip all those steps, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, and I was like, yeah, exactly. Awesome. You know, and like a perfect example, so the guitarist CJ he like jumps back and forth between where he lives a lot in time. Mm-hmm. So like he wasn't around Seattle for a while, and they had to kick out their guitar player, and then their drummer, like he plays in a whole bunch of bands, hit the drummer at the time. So like he wasn't around, but they had booked a show. Mm. So the only people that were around was like John Maiello and John Odo, and Odo plays bass and obviously John sings.
Yeah.
And they were booked on a show. And I was like, how are you going to play that show? And he was like, oh, it's fine. I'm going to play drums and sing, and Odo's going to play bass. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. Like, he, like, at no point was, like, derailed. Like,
freaking out.
Like, if it was just me and Daniel, and I was like, we can't do a rebuilder set right this way. I don't want to put that rebuilder set out there. That's mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to film that. I don't want anyone to see that. I remember I called John the next day. I go, how was that show, dude? He goes, oh, it was awesome. People loved it. Like, oh, he was so excited, yeah, you know?
And I was
like, wow. Always, like, he's so positive. John just has a plan in his mind, and just like, he's like, this is what we're doing. And yeah, we're like, cool, awesome. You yeah know, and I'm glad whenever I can help them out, or whenever mm-hmm. I can, like, you know, lend a hand to John. Cause I think he's a great person. I think yeah the band is great. And it's, you know, especially with John's lyrics. Cause like John sometimes writes so detailed mm-hmm. to Seattle that you're like, how can this relate to anybody?
Yeah.
But it somehow does.
Yeah.
You know, like where he's like, I'm trapped in Ballard and the bridge is up. And he's like walking like home alone.
Right.
And it's just like, I just imagine myself like the times where I was like in Brighton walking by myself, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, he snaps you with his lyrics into like where you live,
yeah,
even if it's not Seattle. Mm-hmm. And like one of my favorite song of theirs is probably, like Face the Music, you know, and there's so many times I've listened to him sing like, I don't want to face the music, I just want to turn around and play some music, you know.
It's yeah
like, it's just simple lyrics to me that I think everyone can relate to, and I think the stuff like that has helped me so much in my life, more than he will ever know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, he comes off really well in this interview. Like, he's earnest.
Right.
You know,
right,
he is serious. Like, when I was interviewing him, I kind of expected him, not knowing him, I expected him to be kind of silly and goofy. And there's a lot of humor in his songs. Mm-hmm. But he was very earnest during yeah the interview.
Right.
Which
I wasn't surprised about, because yeah like I said, like the fact that you're asking him questions about his band and right something that he loves doing.
Yeah.
He's going to take it so serious to the max, you yeah know, and he is like, he's a totally goofy guy, and it's funny, and it's more like in his mannerisms and how you talk to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like a thing. Like I wouldn't see him like dicking around in an interview, because right he's like, this is so serious to me. And yeah like the fact that you want to ask me questions about it, it's like awesome.
Yeah. Like, well, the other thing people should know about this is that I interviewed him back in like October or November.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so long ago.
Yeah, at Charlie's Kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. And then Jessica and I took a break over the holidays, and then I heard he was coming out with this new album, so I wanted to time this podcast with the release of his album. So that's why, but it's still timely. He talks about, you know, what the new album will be like yeah and that kind of stuff. He had, you know, they had a couple songs already recorded.
That's
and
the thing is, they've been playing those songs for years
yeah
as it goes with being in a band. But like, yeah, I mean, I remember them playing like a bunch of these songs. Like Regulars, I think, is one of the best songs, that like rock and roll songs. And that's the thing is, like, you know, they're a punk band, but they're like, this record is really like a rock and roll album,
yeah,
you know? And like, he's a rocker through and through. So it's one of those things, like, no matter when you did this interview, it's like Dead Fires is like timeless, you know.
Yeah,
like, you know,
it is.
And I'm happy with the record. Like, Pink Drink was another one that had always been around for a long time.
Yeah, we talk about Pink Drink too.
Yeah.
And so their new album is coming out this Friday.
Yep.
I think this podcast will probably go out Friday. So today.
Yeah,
today. Go out. Go out wherever you buy records.
Yeah, you should probably get it online. Yeah. I don't know if your local Newbury Comics has it yet. But if you're in Seattle, head on over to Sonic Boom Records.
There you can go.
Probably get it there. Or just go to John's house.
Yeah. It's called Regulars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So find it on iTunes.
Such a great song.
Yeah.
That song Regulars is awesome.
How many songs are on the new album?
I think it's 11 or 12.
It's a good amount.
Yeah. And it was Jay Moss, who's from here, from he was previously in Defeater. He has recorded the Rebuilder record, and he did the Ramona record with me too. He is the one who mixed this record.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that they recorded it with Jack and Dino, who like recorded Nirvana Bleach. And they did that with him in Seattle.
Cool. All right. Well, what song should we play at the end of this?
You got to play Regulars.
Okay. We'll play Regulars.
Yeah.
Okay. So stay tuned for the interview with John of Dead Bars. You're going to love it. Go buy their album. I mean, if you're going to spend, what could it be? $9.99? If you're going to spend $10 on a Friday,
this
buy
just
music.
Shows me how much like you don't look at iTunes.
What? Yes, I do.
Do you buy music on iTunes for $9.99 still? Is that still a thing?
Yeah. Why? Oh, what are you talking
maybe
about?
Maybe this just shows how much I don't buy music on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Albums are $9.99.
Oh.
Dude.
Or like go to their Bandcamp and get it off of their Bandcamp, maybe. Dead Bars. Dead Bars.
What is better? If you get it off of Bandcamp, is it, do they get more of a cut?
So if it's directly from a band's Bandcamp, yes, they will get that full money to them. And Bandcamp takes a small percentage, not that much. If you get it on iTunes, it takes like, I think we get that 3 months like later. It takes time to get it from there, but their cut is pretty good. But I'm guessing that goes to AF because they are the ones putting out the record digitally too, which is great. I mean, you know, they invested money into it.
Right.
Getting their money back is great too.
Yeah.
Or if you pick it up at a Dead Bar show, that goes directly to them and, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if they don't have, I think they have an album release show.
They do. It's May 10th at the Kraken with Ramona and Three Finger. And there's one more band on it who John was telling me about. I think they're a band from like Brazil that he added onto the show, and he's very excited about it.
Okay.
I wanted to fly out and go, but because our van is in the shop, I don't have the money to fly out now.
Right.
But.
And they're playing Pooza.
They are
in Montreal.
Yep.
On May 17th, and then they'll be playing another show in Montreal on the 16th. So they're around.
Yeah, they're around. They're doing some cool stuff, and I would highly, highly recommend everyone going and seeing them. And they play Fest every year, so
yeah, they'll be at Fest this upcoming year.
Yeah, I think they're one of those bands that make it on the flyer.
That's amazing.
The main flyer, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Fest lineup this year is great.
It's great. Yeah. It's always great.
I know.
You got to go.
I know. It's a bucket list.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think it's that's like that hard to bucket.
What do you mean? It is for me.
Why?
For somebody that gets to take one trip a year.
You only get to take one trip a year?
Pretty much. For financial reasons.
Life,
I have mom. I'm a mom.
That's
have
true.
Work.
That's
I have
true.
All these things. I can
you
maybe
know who
one
loves
or
fest?
Two.
Kids.
I am not taking my kids to Fest. Oh my God. Although my kid likes Rebuilder.
That's awesome. I love that.
Do you remember he danced at your show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At this most recent show that we just last week when we played with Frank Turner, at the end of the night, there was a father and son that came up to the table because they were like hovering around. They thought we were closed. And I was like, no, we're open. You're good. So they walk up to the table and I see the kid buy a record from Daniel. He bought Rock and Roll in America. And then he was like kind of staring at me like, you know, and like I was like, hey, man, like, you know, and like I shook his hand because I don't know how to interact with a child. So I just kind of like treat you like an adult because I don't know how to interact with a child. And he was like, this is my favorite record. And like the dad was like, he listens to it all the time on Spotify. And I was like, oh my God.
That's really cool.
Like, this literally is like one of the reasons like why I play music. It makes it all worth it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you had that experience.
It really meant a lot to me.
That's really cool. Awesome. All right. Well, stay tuned for the interview with John and the song Regulars at the end.
Yep.
Thank you, Sal.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This is Kristen, and I'm here with John from Dead Bars. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good. So we're sitting in the van on a rainy Monday night. Kind of stinks.
Mm-hmm. This is the first kind of, I would say, crappy weather on this whole tour.
Oh, you've been lucky then.
So we've been very lucky.
Yeah. So you guys are just coming up from Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you play along the way?
Well, we started this tour in Seattle, and we kind of toured through the middle of the country and toured down to Fest, did a handful of shows down in Florida, and then just did about a week leaving Fest. So I think we did Charleston, Charlotte, North Carolina, Richmond, Virginia, Pittsburgh, Philly, Jersey, New York, and now we're here, Boston. Wow.
And then heading back to Seattle.
Yep. So then after this, we are heading back west. This is our last East Coast show.
That'll be like 3 weeks on the road or something?
It's a little bit over 3 weeks.
Wow. That's a long one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing research on the formation of the band and the history of the band is like all of you did drums at one point, it seems like.
So, kind of like. So I was a drummer in bands for a long time, like when I was in high school and when I was in college, I played in a bunch of bands, and then when I was graduated from college, my band broke up that I was back home where in Jersey where I was from, and mm-hmm. I was basically like, I'm gonna move out to Seattle and try to like play drums out there, and met some folks and tried to play drums, but just it's hard when you're a drummer, because it's hard, you have to rely on a lot of other people. You can't really start your own band as a drummer, at least mm-hmm. I found it was pretty hard. So that's when I decided to kind of do my own thing with the guitar and singing. But yeah, our now guitar player, CJ, he's also a drummer, and he actually played drums on all the records so far.
Right. And then Elliot too, maybe?
Nope. Nobody else is drummers. Okay. There were a handful of other folks that have played with us that have also been drummers in bands, but nobody in the current lineup right now.
Okay, just Ian, who is on drums.
Yeah. Ian is.
And then CJ and you all mm-hmm. have experience. Okay, and so what? So you went to high school mm-hmm. in New Jersey, grew mm-hmm. up in New Jersey. CJ is also from New Jersey. Did you guys know each other?
We didn't like actually know each other. He's a little bit older than me, mm-hmm. So we never like ran on the same. Well, let me say this. We did run in the same circles, but we never actually, like, officially met until years later. But that we found, once we started playing together in Dead Bars, we found out that we had played shows. Our bands had played shows together back in the early 2000s.
Isn't that funny when that happens?
It's pretty crazy. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome.
I have friends that it's like, well, we've been at the same shows for the past 10 years and we just now met or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
So where did you go to college?
I went to a college called Montclair State University
mm-hmm.
in northern New Jersey.
And what'd you study?
I was a humanities major.
Ah, so just kind of liberal arts.
Yeah, liberal arts, history, art, mm-hmm. philosophy.
Oh, cool.
Stuff like that.
And then so why Seattle?
I had a friend that I was playing in a band with named Tom. And we had started jamming in New Jersey, and he was just like, I'm going to move out to Seattle. My brother's out there and I'm going to go to college out there. And it's a good opportunity for me to, you know, kind of like start over there. And me and my friend who was playing with him at the time were like, well, are you moving because you don't want to play music anymore? Or like, you just need a fresh start? And he was like, no, I love playing with you guys, but it's just an easy opportunity for me to go live with my brother out there. So me and my buddy were like, well, we're not doing anything. Maybe we'll just move out there and try to continue what we were, you know, whatever project we were starting.
Had you been there before?
I had never been there before.
Oh, wow.
Well, we decided to visit, I guess. We did go out and visit, like, for a weekend, which was awesome. And then we came back and we're like, made kind of arrangements to move out there. But that band ended up not really coming to fruition. And then I kind of met some other folks and playing around town and stuff.
But. Do you feel like Seattle's home now?
Yeah. I think it's definitely, like, it's where I've spent the longest time as an adult, which is kind of amazing just to think about for sure. But, I mean, like, I was just home visiting my family in New Jersey, and there's definitely a big part of me that still relates to the East Coast and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, Seattle's home. That's for sure.
So do you feel any of the vibe of the East Coast being different than the vibe of the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. The West Coast is just, like... Hey, man, like, you know, I know we're like the Northwest, but like people are like a lot more chill. Like, you know, like I just noticed even like at, you know, places that you work, places that you go to and people you interact with, they're very supportive of like the arts and they're more like willing to kind of like be accepting of other alternative lifestyles, alternative ways of thought. Alternative attitudes, but then there's also very like laid back in a good way. But I do appreciate and like East Coast as well. But yes, I do notice a difference, that's for sure.
And I think so most of you guys, with the exception of Elliot maybe, are transplants.
Yes, Elliot, who plays guitar with us, he has been playing guitar with us for about a year. Elliot is born and raised in Seattle. Everyone else is a transplant, but that's how almost everybody there in Seattle is. A lot of people, a lot of transplants.
Yeah. And now is it maybe CJ just moved to Detroit?
Yeah. So, okay. Our guitar player, CJ, he lived in Seattle. We kind of like, I started the band out there and he basically joined right away and like came on board as drummer, like show number two. Was it played on all the records? Like, super instrumental in the developing the sound and doing a lot of the stuff early on with the band. He ended up leaving the band for a little bit, ended up coming back, and then has since relocated to Detroit, but is like basically, you know, touring with us, and like we're gonna still write music together and all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it hasn't posed a challenge yet?
Not yet. We have played a couple, handful of local shows that we've had, like, kind of just, like, a friend fill in. Or, but, so in that regard, it is a little bit challenging, but, you know, we're kind of started touring more, so it's not as difficult if you plan ahead.
Right. Do you have another tour coming up after this one?
Nothing planned, but definitely stuff that is in the works. Absolutely, we'll be doing something spring of 2019, but I don't know what, but...
Well, it's kind of like the holidays are coming up. I assume people just want to lay low and then maybe in the spring, something new. Cool. I was reading about in high school, the name of your band was Nasarima, and I was wondering if you were familiar with this writing by Horace Minor, The Body Ritual of the Nasarima.
I mean, I think I know what you're referring to. I think that's where we got the name from, but... That was, like, a friend of a friend, like, kind of, like, was, like, I think told me about it.
Yeah.
And then we just really liked how it spelled American backwards. And we were, like, these 14-year-old kids who were, like, just getting into, like, punk stuff and anarchism and alternative kind of stuff. And we thought that how cool that would be to be in the... A band that was kind of like an anti-flag or kind of like a kind of a crusty punk band that had it was literally American spelled backwards and spelled it with a lowercase n and a capital A at the end.
Were there political messages in your songs?
Kind of. I mean, we're so young.
Yeah.
So I don't know how well thought out some of those thoughts were, but I mean, Yeah, of course, the idea was to be more of a political band at that time. Absolutely.
But also, there's something about being that young and maybe in high school when you're not yet jaded or you're not yet... I don't know, maybe you just have more open thoughts about, like, this is fucked up and we need to change this and here's a cool idea or something, you know, like...
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what we were thinking. Like, we were... My freshman year of high school is when, like, the whole September 11th thing happened, mm. like, that first week of my school. So a lot of people, you know, the whole, like, you know, lots of American flags and patriotism and stuff mm-hmm. like that was going on. And I remember thinking that it just seemed, like, really blind, like, patriotism and blind kind of followers. And I
just
think
reactionary.
Reactionary. I think we were just, like... I think even at a very early age, I was just like, there are a lot of the things that have happened over the course of probably 100 years have kind of like led to some of these problems. Mm-hmm. And I just had a more of an open mind about that stuff.
That's amazing.
At that point. So I think we all kind of realized that, and that's kind of like where we were thinking. But yeah. By no means did we... have any good ways of articulating that, I'm sure.
Right. What was one of the songs? Do you remember a song title?
I think we had a song called Publicity Stunt, which was, like, about that, I think, which yeah. is just, like, commercials, like, with, like, flags and stuff. And we're just mm-hmm. like, this is a, mm-hmm. you know, this is a way to sell American flags and, like, you know, God Bless America t-shirts or whatever.
Right,
and
right,
we
right.
thought that was stupid. And then I think we had a song called... Future Path, I remember, was the name of a song, which was basically, like, about people being strung out on drugs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, not doing... I don't really know. I think... I don't know.
But that's really thoughful for, like, 15-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. We were younger than that. We were, yeah. we were 14, for sure.
Yeah.
13, 14... No, we were 14. 14.
Yeah. Well, that's what this Body Rituals of the Nest Room, and I printed it out so you can take it. I think mm. you'd really enjoy it, like reading it, especially as a humanities major,
mm-hmm.
because it's all about, if you take out America and you just describe Americans, it sounds super fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just like, and it'll be like, the Nasarima put on, the women have a ritual about putting paint on their faces and blah, blah, and it's like...
That's right, yeah, so I think we got the name from that, that's...
Yeah, yeah. That sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating if you kind of take away the label of Americans and you really look at it. So anyways, I think our followers would appreciate reading it too. It's kind of, it stuck with me. I remember having to read it in high school and it stuck with me wow. that much that I was like, holy shit. Like it was kind of eye opening. But, so when did you first, like, what was the first instrument that you learned then?
Saxophone, I think, when I was in like fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Played saxophone.
Did you have a musical family growing up?
No, not at all. We had a piano in the house that my mom, nobody played, but my mom thought it'd be nice to have like a piano so that me and my sister could learn, but mm-hmm. I didn't want to learn the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not interested in like that. I wanted to like be into rock music and stuff. So my sister took piano lessons. I didn't do that. So there was a piano.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played saxophone in like for the band.
And so then, you learned music, mm-hmm. like how to read music that way, kind
of. Yeah. But then I stopped doing that, and I kind of forgot all that. And started playing drums. Right after that, probably fifth, sixth grade, played drums in school band, I think, for a little bit. And then I was like, school band is not for me. And then I think started like trying to like start a band like. Right. Around that time, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, something like that.
Mm-hmm. How were you introduced to punk rock music?
I bought the Green Day Dookie tape when I was 7 years old.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. I was going to the store with my mom, and some kid in my class had a Walkman. Well, before I went to the store with my mom, some kid in my class, I think I was in 2nd grade, had a Walkman, and... was like played Basket Case, and I was like, this is the best song like ever. I was like, what band is this? I need this band. And we went to the store and I asked my mom, I was like, I need this tape. And then she got that, and I didn't know it was punk rock, but ever since then I liked that style. And then later on I got into music through my friend and my friend's brother, who I ended up being in a band with later on, and they showed me like Blink-182 and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was early. This is like in the mid 90s.
Yeah, we always
I was super young.
We kind of call them gateway, mm-hmm. gateway punk bands,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, and we were talking to the guy who runs Dying Scene, and he was like, yeah, we put that stuff on our site, you know, that some people may or may not think is punk rock, but if they find our website because they're searching for Blink-182, then maybe they'll find Bouncing Souls or they'll find other stuff that, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Speaking of Bouncing Souls, I remember reading somewhere, I maybe because they're from New Jersey, they were kind of influential to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of looked up, excuse me, I kind of looked up to them as a good example of, like, how to, like, have a band operate. I always, like, really respected, like, that they were friends
mm-hmm.
in high school. They, like, started the band together and then just kind of committed to touring. The, you know, they do all their own artwork. They did all their own tours. You know, I really respected that kind of, like, I guess, ethics or mm-hmm. what, you know, how to do a band.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, being from New Jersey, just seeing them, like, be able to be, like, a headliner and, like, really, like, be, like, the kind of Jersey punk rock band.
Did you go to their shows?
Yeah, I went to see them. I mean, I wasn't that big of a fan in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I, to be honest, got way more into them, like, when I started, like, drinking beer and going to parties and stuff. So I was mm-hmm. like, oh, whoa, like, this kind of makes more sense than it did to me in high school. And then I've just since followed them because I still think they make good records. And
Yeah. Have you met them?
I've met them before. I've met all of them before. Mm-hmm. I used to work at a drum company called... I used to work at a drum company and mm-hmm. we used to sponsor the previous drummer, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to go to some of the shows and I met all those guys just like
casually.
The drummer, mm-hmm. the old drummer, Michael McDermott, I'm still friendly with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually the drummer for Joan Jett right now, which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Fucking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm more friendly with him. And then Greg lives in the Northwest, actually, believe it or not. And
is he in Idaho, maybe?
I think so. He tours around and quite a bit in the Northwest doing solo stuff, and I've booked him once before with his wife Shanti. They do shows together, and I booked them out there.
Uh-huh.
The other guys are just kind of met in passing. Yeah, so I don't really.
You should listen to our interview with them. I would say it's probably my favorite interview because with
the whole band.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which was so cool. And it was, you could sense the friendship. Like you just know that they're good friends. And it was really, I don't know. I say the word cute cause I'm a girl, whatever. But, Greg was about to have his baby and we were all teasing him cause I was like, well, what do you think your baby's going to be like or whatever? But he was like, well, he'll just be like me. And we were like, well, what if you get something totally opposite, you know? And so we're all teasing him like, you're gonna get a Republican kid, you're gonna get a kid that's like, fuck you dad, fuck punk music. Like,
I mean,
it was just great.
How would a kid rebel against your punk rock father? Probably become a Republican, unfortunately. So
right, exactly.
No,
but it was just so nice to sense that friendship amongst those guys. And I've never met a person that's had a bad thing to say about those guys, which has been awesome.
They're a great band.
Yeah.
They stand, I like what they kind of stand for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like very, it's positive.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, totally. And so I did hear the new songs.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with that? It didn't have a title or anything. Is there a new album coming out?
So we just announced a new album, new LP coming out next year. Spring 2019
mm-hmm.
on AF Records out of Pittsburgh. No other real details I can probably share right now, but yep.
Full length. Didn't have a name. You can't share that or don't know?
We think we know, but okay. I don't want to say it right now because
it might change.
Yeah. But okay. New full length. We're really excited about it. It's a follow-up to 2017's Dream Gig. We've put out a single or two since then, since Dream Gig, mm-hmm. but this will be our next album.
Yeah, that's fast turnaround.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, at this point, it'll be 2017 is when we did the Dream Gig album, yeah. So this will be 2019, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's your favorite song on Dream Gig?
Favorite song on Dream Gig is probably the song Dream Gig. Okay. I think that came together exactly how we wanted it, and it kind of, I love the way that what we did with the album, which is like this kind of overture kind of thing in the beginning where this is piano that alludes to this melody that then it reappears at the end of the album in this big epic kind of punk.
Because it ends with Dream Gig.
Yeah. It ends with Dream Gig. But we kind of start off the album with this like melody that is going to foreshadow what comes ahead. And so I think Dream Gig is kind of this big realization, but kind of culmination of all those sounds earlier on in the record, and then it comes out to this kind of like 7 minute long, I don't even know if opus is like the right word, but
do you feel like are you gonna do something like that on the new album?
We'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. And so I always hate asking bands how they got their name. Obviously Dead Bar is a dead bar, but what's the difference between a dead bar and a dive bar?
So Dead Bar's got the name because, yeah, it definitely has to do with like drinking at a bar with like not that many people in it, and yeah. I just noticed that like those are the places that I gravitated to. A dive bar can still have a ton of people in it. Okay. I'm talking about like places where there's like two people in there, mm-hmm. and like it's quiet and you can go in and just like have a beer, and like that's to me, mm-hmm. like a dead bar.
Right. That makes sense. I like those too. But then I find that sometimes then the bartender starts talking to you, or you feel, I don't know, I feel obligated to talk to the bartender.
No, you don't need to do anything.
Just sit there and
just you do you. You don't, if anything, they probably feel obligated to talk to you. And if you say, if you're just like, send the message like, no, I'm just chilling, like, all right.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
I think I have good eyes that are just like I'm just doing my thing. Like I don't need to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have that look
awesome.
Down. So I just have a couple of last minute, like quick fun questions for you. And these are kind of based on your songs.
Okay.
So, do you really not have any tattoos?
I really do not have any tattoos.
And why?
I think I might have been like 20 maybe or 21, and I remember like I just kind of like said to myself, I was just like, I'm either gonna be a tattoo guy or I'm not gonna be a tattoo guy, because I was like, I'm 20 years old, like I need to, if I'm gonna start getting tattoos, it's probably gotta be now. And then I just like took maybe like, I don't even know, like 2 seconds, and I was like, eh, I'm not gonna be a tattoo guy.
Yeah.
So
what would you get if you were to get one?
I don't know. I don't want anything. I think tattoos, like, I don't want to, why would I want to remember, like, this specific event that happened to me, you know, 10 years ago? It's like, I don't want to think about that stuff. I want to think about the future. Mm-hmm. And I think tattoos are reminders of the past. And I know that that's good. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind, but, like.
Right. Like, some people, that works for them. Some people, maybe not.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Did the song Earplug Girl, did that really happen?
It absolutely happened.
She offered one earplug to you?
It happened like it happened in the song. I was standing and watching a show, and I was like, the band was so fucking loud. And I was kind of covering my ears, and I get a tap on my shoulder, and she offers up one of her earplugs.
Did she take it out of her ear and give it to you?
Oh yeah.
So what did you do?
I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember that part of it. I very well could have put it in.
I don't know why I just think that's so funny. Ear,
or I might have just like been like, no. Like, I honestly don't remember what happened. I just remember like reflecting the next day and be like, huh, that's an interesting thing that happened.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, wrote the song.
Girls who smoke, yay or nay? Do you smoke?
I don't smoke, but I don't, wouldn't say I like, that's not necessarily a turn on, obviously. Like, why would I be turned on from somebody that smokes? But it's not a turn off. I've dated people that smoke before, and it's fine. I mean, I prefer people not to, but,
I would think if you don't, you probably prefer people that don't.
Yeah, I mean, I have dated smokers before, so.
What's your favorite pink drink?
That's the thing about pink drink. Yeah. Is
there's
it's part, I don't even know what's in it. Don't tell me what's in it. Whatever the bartender gives you.
Yeah.
It's just that the thing about that is, you know, basically, it's like I don't like really. A long time ago, I stopped drinking hard liquor for. It's just not fun and enjoyable anymore. So, like, it's funny because basically, like, any, like, mixed drink type shot are usually, like, easier to, like, handle. You don't get as fucked up. And it's just more fun, I guess, to, like, do with your friends. It's, like, a thing to do. So, I don't even know, like, our bartender friends, like, used to just make them. And, like, I was like, oh, okay, cool. So
just some sort of fruity concoction.
I also like the way that it... the name, like how that sounds, pink drink. Sounds good.
Yeah. Do you drink wine?
No, I do not drink wine.
Just beer.
Well, I drink, I'll have mixed drinks every now and then, but I don't like wine. I actually don't like fruity things, so it's funny. Like, I will do, like, a shot like that. Like, if I were to want a like a mixed drink, it would probably be like a kamikaze or something, like or a lemon drop. I don't really like the berry flavored stuff, but
super sweet.
Yeah.
Which would you prefer to play at a bar? I was thinking more like a dive bar sort of thing. So pool, darts, or big buck hunter?
Darts.
Oh, you're a darts guy. Yeah,
I'm good at darts, actually. I almost joined a dart league.
I love darts too. What is the one?
Cricket.
Cricket. Thank you. Cricket's fun. Yes. Yeah. Totally. Are there other ways to play darts?
You can do like, I forget like what exactly it is. It's like 500 or something, where you have to basically like accumulate 500 points or whatever.
Is a bullseye like 100 or something?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, or 25 and 50, or okay. 50 and 100, and 100, I think. No, I don't think so. But you can do that, or, like, baseball is another game.
Oh.
I don't know. I usually just play cricket.
Me too. Yeah. Now, do you play in order? Is cricket have to play? Like, you have to get them in order? Or you just get whatever you get, and you do an X and then a circle?
I've always done it that way, like, whatever.
Just whatever you get, yeah.
But I don't know if, like, people are more hardcore. I'm not really sure.
All right. Well, thank you. You know what? We always end. I almost forgot. Punk rock girls in the scene that are killing it right now. Anyone that you would recommend or that we should check out?
Yeah. Lauren D'Inizio from Warriors is...
Warriors?
They're like, called Warriors.
Not Warriors.
Not Warriors.
W-O-R-R-I...
ERS.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool.
They are amazing, and Lauren is the band leader, and they are incredible. Definitely
check Warriors, them out.
And then I'm trying to think whom else. I mean, really, it's just anyone out there who. You know, I've played with Dead Bars.
You've had women play with you guys?
Oh yeah, we've had a lot of different bands. Most of the bands that we've played with on tour, the best bands that we've like local bands that we've played with on tours have been, you know, femme, female, queer, you know, non-binary. And I feel like. It's more interesting music most of the time, although that obviously is not like the rule, but it's a lot of interesting stuff coming from those folks and those bands. I'm trying to think of it. Like, we played with a band called Girlwood from Louisville, who are amazing. We play with a band called Mobina Galore.
I love Mobina Galore. We've interviewed them too.
From Winnipeg. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Countless others, but yeah, it's been great.
Right on. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.